So how's Barry? How's Lord Taco? How's everyone?
Good.
Missed you terribly today. Very excited. I get to talk to, I get to hear you guys talk to Mastodon. How was that?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's really a lot cool. Of fun.
Yeah.
What was the festival that Mastodon's actually on? They just got announced for something and I can't remember what it was.
I don't know, but they just got a Grammy nod.
Oh, that's what it was. Yeah. They got a Grammy nomination. They're now Grammy nominated.
Now Grant, right at like 2 weeks after Taco and I talked to Brian.
Yeah. Coincidence? I don't think so.
You know, it's the chef's kiss. I mean, this is the golden seal of approval to what podcast means. Get Grammy. I mean, look at how many Grammys we have. So it must be something.
It's coming.
So I've got a ton to get through today. And then I want to do a brand new game later called Bana True or False. See what I did there. Bana True or False. I'll give you some true or false over under predictions for Bonnaroo. I got to feel like we're close to a Bonnaroo lineup. We're in lineup speculation season, and you know, you can go back and listen to all the shows that we've talked about lineup speculation season. Man, people get weird this time of year. They get very, very strange. And you know, the dedication that some of the lineup speculation people have, I mean, it's a lot.
Yeah.
They are into it.
A lot of tea leaves being read.
Yeah. I want to start with news that we just sort of missed for months. It turns out Jeff Cuellar leaving some sort of version of whatever he was doing with Bonnaroo and some of the festivals to get a new job.
That's correct.
That's right.
I texted Jeff briefly and then I've talked to some of his friends. He now is working basically booking. Wow. I just thought how it's going to sound when I say it. Hmm. They do a lot of the big events, like cruise line events. Mm-hmm. So they book those types of things, and that's what he's doing. And if you'd have given me a heads up, I would have looked up the name of the company that he's doing it for.
Why would I do that?
I know, right? I should have saw that coming. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's okay. No, I mean, it
won't ring a bell with anybody. Well, I mean,
I know it's really, really inside baseball, but that's what sort of what the show is. It's a big
Six
move.
Lamp.
Congratulations on a big, big job. Secondarily, you know, it has all kinds of ramifications for, you know, our world, seeing as that, you know, he was a major, you know, person inside this universe.
You know? Yeah. Sorry. You threw me with your question. It's called Six Man, but you're 100% right. Jeff has been, for this entire time, a go-to person. He's the guy that gives the media tour. He's the guy that we've had on our show twice. He's the guy that AC or Live Nation would put out in front of the camera. He's the guy that we would talk to.
With all that being said, he's very, very good at his job.
He's very good at his job.
At his job. And plus, he looks damn good in a banana suit. Looks damn good in a banana suit.
You're exactly right. That was a great moment. That was funny.
So I don't know who dons the banana suit now, but you know, I've got some early predictions, and I'm guessing that Mr. Barry Quarter is next up in the banana suit.
Boy, that's a big banana suit. That's a big that's a big peel.
That's a banana tree.
That's the entire banana. But let's go back to that. You know, because I'm glad you brought that up. Because we've talked for what, 6 months, a year, maybe more, about how this Bonnaroo has not, they've not communicated, they've not done things that we've come to expect as far as announcements and whatnot. And I have to believe Jeff's been a huge part of that. He's always had the pulse mm-hmm. of the festival, and maybe him being gone is part of it. So I think you're exactly right to bring that up, and I'm glad you did.
Yeah, I just, I mean, I'm happy for him. I mean, it's, you know, he was at that job for a long time. There's just very few of us that have it in us to stay somewhere for so long. Barry Quarter, I mean, you're hanging on by a thread. You are in.
I always joke we had the 911K, the retirement plan at the paper where I am. You're going out feet first.
I hear you. Measure the walls. That's all I say. Measure the windows and walls and however your exit plan. Second thing I want to get to is the Hangout lineup that came out right after our show a week and a half ago or so. Any initial thoughts on it. I know it's not going to be something that we are jumping up and down about, you know, but it's not really made for us.
That's right.
Found their lane, and we said it over and over and over. They do this better than probably anyone. They do a pop festival just about as good as anybody.
Yeah, I'm looking at it quickly. A handful of folks, Tane, Leon, Post, Briston, or, you know, other than that, it's not for me. Phoebe Bridgers, yeah. Other than that, yeah, it's not for me. So, what,
it's,
you
a,
know,
it's a pop
but that's
fest.
The point. They're not all supposed to be. So, yeah. Yep, that came out.
What about Taco? Taco, you going to, you taking the bus down to hang out?
That's a no.
Yeah.
That's a no from me. Yeah.
Oh, nothing, why? You could park really right there on the beach. There.
Yeah. I do like the beach, uh-huh. But yeah, not this lineup.
Mm. It's good, though. I mean, let's not cast aspersions. It's a good lineup for what they try to do. It's very well done. You know, it just is. Yeah. It's not for us. Fall Out Boy, yeah, even though, and they're a major, you know, artist for my radio station. For me, it's just unbearable. Absolutely unbearable.
I'm glad to see Kane Brown on there. Kane's a Chattanooga guy who I think I wrote the very first story on Kane and have been following him. So talked to him personally for the first time.
Another show stamp of approval.
There,
you know,
let it go, man. That's how big time we are. But I like Kane and I'm proud for what he's done. So glad to see him on there.
All right. So before I get to a couple elephants in the room. I'll save my top songs for the end for Bonner, true or false. Let's go. I wanted to touch briefly on this Coldplay thing because I kind of got lost into the weeds of a Reddit and InfoRoo thread, mainly because it's lineup speculation season and every conversation starts and ends with Coldplay right now. So I want to just go back and repeat. There was one guy, I don't even know who it was at this point, but he said something about, you know, I was talking out of my ass about, you know, my information about Coldplay. And, you know, we don't talk out of our ass. I just give you whatever we have at the moment. And so let's rewind and start the whole timeline of Coldplay all over again. 2 years ago, when the lineup was, when we were this part of the season, I basically said, because I knew that Coldplay was not going to be on the lineup. There were people talking about bringing Coldplay. It was... you know, they had an album at the time. It made sense. Why would they not? They've never done Bonnaroo. This would be a perfect addition. And I said, well, it's not going to happen this year because they only do tours every other album. I don't know what show that was. Somebody's much better at this than I, but they only do tours every other album cycle. All right. So then not last year comes up and I say, well, Coldplay's possible. It's very possible considering they're now on a secondary album cycle. Well, now, then the next step was from everybody that I talked to, and this is everybody except Dave, their manager, has basically told me it just doesn't make a lot of sense for Coldplay at Bonnaroo. And here's why. Their stage show is massive. It takes multiple days to build, and though it works out schedule-wise, and they're in the Southeast at the end of their run, they've got to send their gear to Germany. And that is a 2-week shipping process. Now, that's all that I've been told. That's not making an assumption that they're in or out. But everybody that I have talked to just finds Coldplay hard to believe. Then on top of all of it, I still personally think that Coldplay, whether or not you like them or not, still feels like an odd fit for Bonnaroo. You know, they just put out a album that for me was just dog shit. I mean, it has BTS on it, for crying out loud. Now, I understand that's, you know, giving them a ton of exposure because BTS is constant clickbait. You know, the second that you put BTS on anything, you get 10 million, you know, streams and downloads. But at the same time, that just never felt like Bonnaroo's world. Now, granted, could Bonnaroo have Coldplay? Sure. Totally plausible. But from everything that I've talked to, everybody I've talked to up to, and not including Dave, their manager, it just seems implausible. So that's the clarification on Coldplay. I don't know. I really don't know. I tend to lean no, but what do I know?
This is why I don't get as involved in it as a lot of people do. There's so many factors. Number one, number two, it just feels like you create an expectation. And if it doesn't happen, if, you know, then you're disappointed. Not that that's what, you know, how things should be determined, but I don't spend a whole lot of time speculating on who's coming. I have my wish list. I have my don't care list, you know. I mean,
I hear you, but I would feel derelict of duty if I get a piece of information and then I don't share it. I try to share this stuff, you know, as it comes, with the understanding that, you know, so much can change, so much can you know, be different. But if, you know, the point of the show is to, you know, be sort of an inside look at,
yeah, you're right,
you know, how all of these things work together. And then you have a piece of inside, you know, information and you don't share it.
You're right.
What are we really doing here?
Except for, you know, share it.
Patting
you,
everybody else on the back.
And you did. I've seen some, King Gizzard is another with speculation. I mean, I look at him. It makes sense. Gizzard is the one that really... I mean, I remember getting an email from them and seeing their schedule and thinking they had that June 16 through the 18 open and thinking that's when Bonnaroo is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 2 days later, Bonnaroo announced the date. So
yeah, that's actually, you bring up a good point. So although, and this is, again, this has nothing to do with Coldplay, but if just because somebody has an opening in their schedule, I just don't necessarily think that that's the best, you know, marker.
No, it's
for
not.
This person is definitely a Bonnaroo possible band.
Totally,
you know, like
agree,
you said earlier, there's just way too many other, you know, things happening as part of it. And the other thing too that I was told is that Coldplay's not doing any festivals this year. So if they did do Bonnaroo, it would be completely out of nowhere. Well,
when you were talking, I was just thinking, what, you know, conspiracy wise or whatever you want to call it, maybe they do a smaller scale set just for Bonnaroo.
But again, all
why
the
not?
Things, but talking out of both sides of my mouth, all the things do work out for Coldplay to be a very easy guess, right? Because the schedule works out. Sure. They're in the Southeast. It's at the end of their tour. They're on an album cycle that they're touring with. You know, all of it does make sense. It really does. So, you know, who knows? Maybe it's very plausible, but, you know, based on the people who, you know, I've talked to, and maybe they don't know. They yeah. find it to be, you know, not likely.
Yep. I know. I think the Stones came up again this year because their schedule fits.
Yeah. The Mastodon guys, nice enough. Did you have multiple guys or did you just have one?
We had Braun.
Braun
Mastodon, one of the singers. And
Master Braun.
Master Braun, one of the originals. Are we going to go into that? Because
let's do that.
I want to talk about the Beatles thing. Are we going to talk about that before?
Oh God, if you want to, let's do this, and then we'll talk to Barry about the Beatles and do a round of Bonna True or False, and then I want to get to what I'm hoping will be the biggest surprise of Bonnaroo 2022. We'll do it next after Mastodon on the What Podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'll let Russ. First of all, that's Russ. I'm Barry. Thanks for doing this. I'll let him explain his love for PBR because it's pretty legendary.
Well, it did win a blue ribbon. That's a pretty major award. So, you know,
it's actually pretty funny. He there's some rate my beer.
Untapped.
Untapped, where you
Untapped,
can go,
like, you can, go, you can go check in different beers you drink, and I only check in PBR. I've got like 400 something check-ins.
Wow. Yeah, I know. I'm familiar with Untapped. I tried to do it for a minute, but I was like, yeah, I'm just going to quietly drink. But I don't want people knowing.
Well, I might not want to advertise that.
That's right. Yeah, if it gets up into the thousands, you might have to explain, right?
Yeah. Conversations have to be had.
Well, there's a lot
I'm hoping for a sponsorship. I'm trying to get that PBR sponsorship and get them to send me some
I know,
stuff.
Yeah. We've had it before a couple times. We've had some tours that were sponsored by PBR, and mm-hmm. it's for the prestige, really.
Yeah. It's mm-hmm. quite an honor.
Yeah.
Well, Russ is pretty sincere about it, apparently. Anyway, a lot of things we want to get to. Let's start with the album because it just came out, right?
Yeah, might as well.
Eighth
for
one?
Lack of anything else to talk about.
No, there's plenty. Eighth one, is it what, your fourth with the guys? Is that right? Or is that all eight? Did I?
Me? Oh, I've been there since the beginning.
Okay, I misread.
Probably about 9 albums, I guess. It's the same 4 guys for the whole time, so we haven't had any lineup changes or anything.
All right. Well, I misread that part. I apologize, but I was listening to it. It's really good, and I know you're handling vocals and drums on just about all the songs, right? A couple that I'm lead anyway. What was the thought going in? Why'd you want to do it this time? Was it just a timing thing or?
Well, I guess the first time I appeared vocally in the band was Crack the Sky, which is 2009. And ever since then, I guess we've just utilized my vocals throughout. So I'll handle choruses a lot of times. I don't know. I've always had vocal ideas, and, you know, it takes all 4 of us to make an album. So, you know, all ideas are welcome. And so, if I have a vocal idea, I go in and sing it. And if it works with my voice, then we commit to it. If I can do it physically, if I can go back behind the kit and make it happen, I usually try it out first. And then if the rhythm underneath is too difficult and I can't sing it, then I pass it on to somebody else. But, you know, for us, it really comes down to who has an idea, who's passionate about the idea, who wants to sit down and write some lyrics, who has something to say, and is the you know what I mean, it just really comes down to who wants to do it. And then also it sort of hinges on the riff or the part, you know. Usually for all of us, we kind of know what if there's a certain riff happening, oh, that's going to be good for Troy's voice or for Brent's voice or for my voice. So we usually kind of know, but sometimes somebody will go in and sing something and it's just not quite right. So we give somebody else a crack at it, and then that's someone that fits, and we go, yeah, cool. So we go with that. So yeah, it's just really, just comes down to our personal taste and what we think sounds the best.
Yeah. I'm always fascinated talking with bands about albums, especially bands that have been together for a while, how they come together. Do you guys have the most of the song done before you go in, or do you go in with nothing and see what comes
out? No. Yeah, we're talking about a year plus of writing and retooling, and it's like a garden, you know, of songs, and there are all these little seedlings, you know, that you are tending to throughout the year, and you just kind of water them and check in on them, and oh yeah, that one's getting, you know. So it's more like that. It's like you have this crop and you are tending to it the whole time until it's full grown, and then that's when you go in the studio for real. Leading up to that, we demo and change things and cut this out and put that back there and see, you know, oh, this one's got these 3 sections, but I feel like it needs an ending. Or we always know when there's like, you know, oh, there's something missing from this, or it's too long, we need to cut that part out, or that's, you know. So
yeah,
it's a lot of performing and listening and you know, we're very self-critical about it, and we try to just getting the four of us to really fall in love with it is a difficult task enough. So it takes a lot of work.
Do you have it to the point where you have the sequencing and everything before you go in, or is there still some editing?
No, I would say that there are bands that go in and they're 100% ready. They're 100%. But we like to leave room for, yeah. You know, we like to leave a little bit of unfinished business, I guess, so that once we're in the studio, we can mess around with some things. So it's not like rigid and locked in, you know, once we're in there.
Yeah. I mean,
because we also are a fan of, you know, whatever the mood strikes. So we want the mood that day to be the thing that, you know, guides the ship that day, but a majority of it is locked in, you know? So I'd say 75-80% is like pretty rock solid. And then the other 20% or 15% is up for debate.
Yeah, that's why I say it's always fascinating to me, because sometimes I'll talk to people and it'd be like, no, we didn't have anything. We just kind of throw it against the wall and see where it lands. And
yeah, I don't know. But I mean, we don't really operate like that. we're not that spontaneous. We like to plan everything out. And but I mean, when we start writing an album, nobody really has anything, and we just start getting together and a riff here and a riff there. Like I said, it's a slow evolution that, you know, over time. That, I mean, you know, if it wasn't for the pandemic, we wouldn't be talking about a double album, you know.
Yeah, that was the other thing.
We had the extra time, so we used it to write music, because we don't, you know, there was no tour looming, and there's nothing else to think about except for the album. Right. So we just kind of dug in and just kept pouring over and pouring over and building and building. And we had way too much material, so we had to scale it back, and we were able to get to 15, and there you go.
It's funny. I've talked to people who during the pandemic, some of them will say, yeah, I took the time to practice a lot, you know? And then I've heard some say, I hate practicing. I never practice. So everything is just so different. That's what's fun about it.
Yeah. I'm not a big practicer. I mean, I guess I do sometimes, but I mean, I love playing, you know, but I prefer more playing with people. It's more fun than just kind of jamming by yourself.
Because you had time, did the themes maybe, did the songs change? I mean, you know, it was such a weird time a year and a half or 20 months ago. I can't remember who I talked to, an artist. It was like the month in, and it was like, man, these songs are really depressing. put those aside, you know?
Well, I mean, the songs are pretty depressing on the album. So, but that was happening already. So it wasn't like the pandemic changed anything for us. It just sort of confounded it, you know? It's okay to be depressing. And it's okay to be depressed as long as it's not, you know, clinical depression.
Yeah.
And it's okay to kind of sit in it for a while, because, you know, I mean, we lost someone near and dear to us, and we knew that the next record was going to be about him and for him, and was going to be a monument to, the relationship that we had with him and everything that he did for our band, namely Nick John, our manager, and
right.
One of our best friends that passed away from pancreatic cancer in 2018. Mm. Huge loss for the band. And there was no possible way for us to, you know, sidestep it. So we put, you know, the album itself, to me, is a manifestation of, you know, that grief cycle, going through that as a band, you know, the four of us trying to work it out and figure out, you know, what happened and why, and all those questions and frustrations and the anger that's associated with that, when someone leaves too soon, and, you know, some sort of almost resolve at the end with the song Gigantium, where we, just kind of see the sun poking out behind the clouds a little bit.
Yeah. So you had that going in. I mean, when you started, you kind of all knew this was going to help drive where we're going. Did your previous albums, do you have that sort of thing going in? Obviously not this exact same instance or same scenario, but is it something that we sit around ahead of time and say, here's where we kind of,
it's unspoken, you know, it's more like it gets written about and then you realize, Troy's really writing about it. Okay. You know, I'm probably going to write about it too. So it's unspoken, it's written about, and you kind of just, you know, acknowledge in that way. And the emotion behind the actual music, the riffs that come, I don't know. I guess I'm one of those people that sees, like, when I'm hearing riffs or something that Bill's playing or something that Brent's playing, I see like a little movie in my head, you know, kind of like a cinematic theme starts to unfold. So
yeah,
I don't know, for this record in particular, it just seemed a lot darker. So I kind of, yeah. That sort of guides the lyrics a little bit too, you know, there's evocative, riffs, you know. I mean, I'm more stimulated, I guess, from the musical aspect of it than the lyrics for any kind of music that I listen to. I don't pay attention to the lyrics that often, you know. I'm getting a feeling from the sounds that are happening, and so more so than whatever's being spoken, you know. I'd be like singing along to some song, have no idea what the words are for 30 years, you know. Like, you don't know the words to that song. I'm like, I don't know the words to it. I have no idea what they're talking about. I don't know. I'm getting more of a vibe from the actual music that's being played. So that's more like where my brain is.
I get it completely. I'm the exact same. In fact, I recommended to my daughter, who was a athlete at a Catholic school, that she had to play a certain song for their like warm-up music. And she's like, Dad, do you have any idea what that's about? I was like, oh yeah, okay, probably better not do that.
Was it Eric Clapton's Cocaine? No,
it was Scissor Sisters' Whole New Way, I think.
Oh, okay.
Which is a great melody. I love the song.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I have no idea. I mean, you know, aside from Cocaine, I know everybody knows what that's about, right. I'm in the dark a lot of times with the lyrics of a song.
Yeah.
As far as the previous albums, yeah, I think that around Crack the Sky is when we started to realize that, hey, Mastodon would be a really great dumping ground for all these sort of negative emotions that we're experiencing. We can put it all in that vessel, put that out into the world, hopefully make something pretty out of a maybe not so great situation, and maybe help somebody along the way a little bit and help ourselves, you know. And then for some reason, every time we would go into a writing mode or come into some downtime and be like, you know, Brent's brother passed away, Bill's mom had brain cancer and died, and Troy's wife had breast cancer, and it just started to, every time we would go into a writing cycle, it seemed like we would have this tragic event sort of be the informer for, you know, that would ride tandem with the writing of the album, you know. And we don't obviously live in a vacuum, and so when we're in writing mode or creating mode and you're being affected by these sort of traumatic experiences, that's what informs your art, you know, if you're going to be honest. I mean, you could sidestep it and grab the newspaper and write about current events, but the thing that's on your mind is the thing that's going to inform your, whatever you're creating, yeah, at that moment in time. So yeah, that sort of monopolizes all your creative energy. And so if you're being honest in the press, or if you're being, you know,
yeah,
honest with yourself and your lyrics, we just started to get more literal and less fantastical, which, you know, I don't know if that's good or bad, but you know, I it's good for us.
It has to help that you guys have been together so long. I don't remember who it was again that I was talking to, but they were saying how having been a band together for so long, it sort of one of the big advantages is you're over the whole, as you were saying, you can be honest with each other. You don't have to tiptoe around, you know, you don't have to lead every sentence with, I know you're really good, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Don't take this the wrong way, but
I'm guessing, we're pretty past that. Just about 22 years together.
Makes a big difference though, doesn't it?
I don't know. I don't really have anything to put it up against, but I mean, as far as relationships are concerned, you know, this is my longest relationship with these guys.
Mm-hmm. I was reading your Rolling Stone article. It's been pretty good. You've done some pretty cool stuff. The Game of Thrones thing jumped out at me. Obviously I was a huge fan. What was that experience like?
Yeah, that was a good little TV show they had over there.
It was okay.
Nice little TV show.
It did all right. But yeah, for people who know, you guys got to actually appear in two seasons anyway, right?
Yeah, we were on one episode in season 5 and episode in season 7, I think.
Yeah.
It was pretty amazing. You know, just to get to be there, you know, it was just cool to be on set, hang out with some White Walkers.
You got to do makeup and everything, right?
Yeah. We had our own trailers and, you know, it was pretty special. We started a tour in Ireland and, they filmed in Belfast. And so we got there a couple days early. We were part of a pretty epic scene. It was a big battle scene called Hard Home, where the White Walkers turned the wildlings into whites, and the King White Walker comes out and raises the army of the dead, and Jon Snow is looking in horror, thinking, yeah, this is the end, you know, it's coming, winter's here. So it's cool to be laying in the mud for that.
Yeah.
And to get up with that. I looked over and I saw Bill, my guitar player, was asleep in the mud. And we were about to have our cue, you know, that we're supposed to get up. And I think that he woke up at the last second. Otherwise, he was like about to be that guy amongst hundreds of extras that were laying in the mud that, you know, they had these cues, groups 1, 2, and 3. And so they were staggering when you had to stand up and be all, you know.
Nobody wants to be that guy.
Nobody wants to be that guy.
Yeah.
that White Walker.
Yeah.
But that was really fun. Obviously, you know.
Who initiated the whole thing, I guess?
Dan B. Weiss was one of the co-creators and one of the writers of the show. Was a Mastodon fan. And we played a festival in the UK with Metallica, Alice in Chains, and Motorhead. It was big, you know, like a download festival, or I think it was Sonosphere. I can't remember, one of the two. Actually, it was our guitar player, Brent, had stayed behind to hang out and watch more bands. And I think we were done with our tour. So I just like got out of there with everybody else and went back to the hotel and crashed. But I guess he stayed behind with our publicist, Emma, and somebody came up to Brent and asked for a photo, and they had a U.S. accent. So he asked where they were from and what they were doing in town. And they said, we're filming a TV show. And he said, what TV show? And they were like, oh, Game of Thrones. So, you know, eyes got wide. We were all big fans. We had watched, kind of brought our band and crew together every Sunday on tour, watched Game of Thrones, you know, on the tour bus. And so very exciting. Got, you know, some phone numbers got passed around. Our publicist kept in touch with them, and they made it happen to where we could be extras in the show.
That's really cool. That had to be pretty, probably didn't see that coming, but glad it did, kind of thing, you know?
Oh, yeah. There's been a bunch of instances where I say, thank you, Mastodon. You're making my life really, really cool.
That's kind of what I was thinking when I was reading all that stuff. Yeah, you've done some cool stuff. And
yeah, it's all, you know, I mean, it's all gravy, baby.
It's the other funny thing I wanted to mention, and it's more a pick at me, but I have said on our show several times that the Lionel Richie show at Bonnaroo, when they announced it, I just thought was, I couldn't believe they were bringing Lionel Richie. I was not happy. I didn't think it was the right fit and whatever. And ever since, that is the one show besides Paul McCartney that everybody talks about as being just one of their favorites. And there, you mentioned it in that article. It was one of your favorites.
It was.
I know.
It was. I was kind of blown away, you know. He was so funny and so cool, and the songs were so great. He had a whole shtick going. Man, that was just a great show. I loved it.
Yeah, I'm not kidding. It comes up all the time.
That's funny. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I thought I was the only one that liked it.
Oh no.
I'm just kidding. Yeah.
No, it was,
they were lined up for Lionel, that's for sure.
That's right. And even I was surprised at the number of young people, you know, 20s who came back to camp that night and were saying that was one of the best shows I've ever seen and what a blast. And so
I went and saw him again a few months later at the Chastain Park here in Atlanta. I was like, man, I'm going to see Lionel again. I had just gotten home from Europe, and I remember sitting in the audience. I almost fell asleep because I was just so completely jet lagged and out of it. But, it was fine.
I tell the story because good for Lionel and bad for me. You know, what an idiot. Yeah. I think I stayed at camp. I was like, I'm not going to that thing.
Oh, man, you missed it.
Oh, I know. But I miss Tom Petty, too. So, you know.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah. It's not the first. It won't be the last either.
Right. Exactly.
Speaking of touring, how you guys are, I assume you're glad to be back out and playing.
Yeah. We've played five shows. They've all been festivals, throw and goes and the whole deal. So it's been good to get back out there, you know, dust the rust. So we start on Saturday, another festival on Saturday, but Saturday, Sunday, Monday, we start, or Sunday we play. Monday, Tuesday, we play in Asheville, North Carolina with Opeth and Zeal and Ardor. And that will be the start of our tour that will go for about 3 weeks, which is not very long. So, you know, dipping our toes in, getting back to it, sleeping on a shelf.
Yeah.
Living out of my backpack. Nope. I've been spoiled being home for this long, man. I don't know. You know. So we'll see if I can. I'll have to get the melatonin going and my whole routine out there.
I think I would be remiss and not asking just because of the timing, but the incident at Astroworld over by Houston is just a horrible thing. Is that?
Reminds me of the Roskilde Festival thing that happened 20 years ago. So
yeah, it's not the first time for people who don't know, the, you know, 79, I guess, in Cincinnati, nothing to this extent, but what does that do in your world? I mean, is it just something you talk about like the rest of us and say how horrible, or is it something more business corporate, like, I guess, if you will, is it something else that you have to, one more thing to talk
well
about?
I mean, no, I don't think I mean it really, I think it's kind of an anomaly, you know what I mean? Fortunately it's not something that happens a lot. It's pretty rare, so that aspect of it is, you know, it's not like it's rampant, you know, like, oh my god, people are just being crushed at every show, there's people dying, and that would just be, oh my god, this is insane, what's going on, something needs to change. So I mean, the writing was on the wall. I haven't, you know, read super deep into what exactly went on, and I think that there's an investigation into what was happening there, so I don't know all the ins and outs of it. Right. It's horrible tragedy. But you know, I trust the the people that come out to our shows to be mindful of each other. And I trust the security at the venues that we play. I mean, we have, it's a little more, you know, they're a little smaller than probably what that show, what was happening there than that festival. You know, the festivals seem like, they're a little further out of control of what we can do, you know. Right. Or you have our tour manager has a security meeting every show, and they talk about what needs to go down and how we want things done. And so it's a little more in our control when it's our show, you know. When it's a festival, it's a little bit out of our control. We don't know. But I could see how easily it could happen. I remember myself like going to see, I was in the pit for Rage Against the Machine, 1993 Lollapalooza, and a bunch of people's legs just kind of got locked. There was a bunch of people in front of me that were trying to get out of there because it just got real tight real fast. And a whole bunch of people fell down, and I was one of them. I remember my face just going right into the dirt, and people were just stepping on my head, and I'm like, I'm going to die. I'm going to die in this pit. This is insane, you know. I finally pulled myself up out of there. Nobody helped me. It was really scary.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can see how it can happen. It can happen like that, like just in an instant. And then there's nothing anybody can do. And I don't know. What a horrible, horrible situation.
Yeah. Reading about the families this yesterday or the day before, I guess, is just heartbreaking. Some of them are my kids' age. So that kind of put me in that mind.
Right.
But I haven't fallen, but I know at one of the crowds at Bonnaroo, you know, people will sit or fall asleep or pass out. So you kind of have to watch where you're stepping as well as where you're going.
Right.
And it was late at night. And that was the only time I think I started, you know, in walking in this area and was heading that way and ended up over here without knowing how I got there, type of thing.
Wow.
Yeah. It's very scary.
Yeah, especially when they start pushing from back, from the back, people start pushing and you start getting crushed. You're like, oh my God, I could really get completely crushed here.
I have no control over.
I have no control over it. And from the back, people are just, you know, and you're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
I never try to get up on that bar, man. I kudos to the people that are up on the front, you know, getting. We've had a couple instances where we've had to talk to security and tell them to pull some people out, you know.
I know Russ and I were both really looking forward to seeing you guys at Bonnaroo this past year.
You were one of my picks.
Yeah.
For the festival that didn't happen 2 years in a row.
Oh, man. I could not believe it.
Any chances we get you back there? Or is that even something you have any control over, or how does that work?
It's up to the people at Bonnaroo. They want to bring us. I mean, I assume they would want to. They brought us for this past one, I guess. I mean, we were a fill-in for someone, but I think they like us, and we've always been well-behaved.
I haven't heard any bad things.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I saw your show at Exit 111 in 2019 there at the farm.
Oh, cool. Thanks.
Yep.
Thanks and, we wanted to go watch ZZ Top, but we had to play.
I understand.
We're like, who did this to us?
Yeah. Who do I talk to?
Yeah,
that's a festival I would love to see come back. I thought Exit 111 worked really well there. It wasn't Bonnaroo, but it was just a different crowd, different energy, but it was still a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was great. That was the last show we played before the pandemic.
Yeah,
no one knew what was upon us.
Yeah. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, all right, man. Anything you wanted to make sure to mention that I didn't ask?
I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I mean, well, I should probably say during the pandemic, I drew 101 clowns in 101 days to sort of occupy my time. And, now that it's been turned into a coffee table book that is coming out called Bron Daler's 101 Clowns of the Coronavirus.
Nice.
Catchy title, right?
Yeah, I love it.
So that's coming out on the 14th, I think, of this month through Revolver magazine.
Very cool. Why clowns? I mean, it's always been
I like clowns, and then and I have a clown room in my home, you know, just to kind of torture people when they come over, you know, show them the clown room and some reactions, you know.
Are these happy clowns or all
yeah, happy clown? There's one very small Pennywise, the OG Pennywise, just over in the corner, and there's a replica of the Poltergeist clown that lays on the bed. So it's not exactly like, I'm not a big fan of scary clowns on purpose, but I have a couple.
Gotcha.
But yeah, you know, I drew a clown in my big sketchbook and it was fun. It came out cool. I sent it to a couple friends, and then I started sending more clowns to more friends. And I said, oh, I'll do this for 14 days because it's going to be 2 weeks to slow the curve, and everything was going to go back to normal at the very beginning.
That's what we were told. Yeah,
exactly.
And then 101 days later, I finally had to like put them away, but they got pretty involved, and I just was exercising a different part of my brain and kind of teaching myself how to draw along the way, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was getting me out of bed every morning and going downstairs and cracking my sketchbook and then sitting and drawing this clown. Take like 5 or 6, 7 hours to do it, and then I would send them off to everybody. And it just turns out that the clown is such an icon that you can clown just about anything. You can turn an airplane into a clown. You can, you know, there's a Steve Harvey clown. There's a Richard Simmons clown. There's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre clown. You know, you can clown anything, basically.
Yeah. That's funny.
So, yeah, it's the closest thing I've ever come to like having a journal or something. So, I mean, I remember during it, you know, there'd be people that were sort of using a whole week of clowns to sort of psychoanalyze me and then send me a big long text of where they thought I was at mentally.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was like a doodle thing. We have one of our sports writers at the paper where I work doodles, but everything he draws are headless Kentucky basketball players.
Okay.
he's got these like headless bodies doing a layup or a jump shot, never have a head on them. And he'll leave them behind all over the office.
Well, heads are hard to draw.
Yeah. Yeah, you get all the rest of it. That's really cool. That's cool. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for your time. This has been a real pleasure and an honor.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Looking forward to seeing you guys.
Yeah, we'll see. Bonnaroo.
All right. Yeah, good. Hope so.
Yeah, hope so. Right. That would be great.
The What Podcast, which bands this year that matter. After a long, long chat with Mastodon and some clarifications on the news, I am ready to get to a round of Bonna True or False, Barry Corder, Lord Taco. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm ready. I can't wait to lose.
Yeah. There is no losing in this game, except for like
we're
5 months
winners.
From now.
Except
we're
for
all
5 winners.
Months. All right. Bonna True or False? Bonnaroo 2022 will sell out.
I'll say true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with true.
Interesting. Really, both true. Why? Why do you think that?
I just that feeling that, wow, man, that's a good question. That's a good question. And that probably could change from week to week. If you'd asked me 3-4 months ago, I would 100% said sell out. Now I'm a little hesitant because I just don't know how people feel about it. Mm-hmm. But I still feel like people are ready to get out. I'm gonna say it'll sell out.
I have a feeling that the way people's ticket buying is going to change, and already has, frankly. I think that people are seeing that if it is a big, big, almost once in a lifetime show, it's going to do just fine. Okay. I think that with the shows that are struggling are the ones that feel as though you can get it, you know, 6
anytime.
Months from now or a year from now. Yeah.
Nobody knows what the economy and people's wallets. Yeah. Boy, well, that's a great question.
If the Black Friday presale is in the indication, it seemed like everybody was buying Black Friday presale tickets.
How did it go? It went well then?
yeah, everywhere I saw people posting their, you know, screenshots, got my tickets, confirming they bought them. It seems like everybody went out and bought them first thing.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's a great, yeah, that's I haven't followed through. You know, and the reason why I think it's interesting to differentiate between, you know, these once in a lifetime shows and then the shows that you can see, you know, anytime. I kind of don't know which side I fall in with festivals. I don't know if the festival is a quote unquote one time in your life sort of thing, or if it's just something that you can see eventually again. I don't know where I fall in this. I maybe if, you know, Beyonce is there or something that's so unbelievable. But if it's the lineup from 2020 or 2021, I don't know if it really moves the needle to sell out.
And maybe think again. I mean, we've done it. We're of a certain age. If you're a high school or college age kid, they've basically been shut down. So you're talking about a kid who, you know, who's gone from 15, 16 years old,
right,
to now is 18, will be 19 years old and hasn't had that opportunity. So, oh man, that's, mm-hmm. I don't know. I was thinking about that just this morning. We haven't been on the farm in 2 years, almost so 3 years.
All right, Bono, true or false, number two, we will have more than one carryover from the top two lines from 2021. We will have more than one carryover from the top two lines in 2021. From 2021.
I'm going to say true.
I hope it's false. I'd rather they just start fresh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want any bad juju from these past two lines. Oh,
well, I'm thinking My Morning Jacket's still going to be in play. Of course, I think.
Define headliner. Which line?
Top two lines. I said top two lines. Yeah.
Okay.
So who else are you putting in there, Barry? Who's your other carryover? You got to have a second.
I know. I still have to believe Lizzo is in play, but I don't. Other than that, I'd have to look back at the.
Like I'd tell you something about Lizzo. And this is again, as it stands right now, she has nothing on her schedule for 2022. I think they're still trying to figure out the album. The last song sort of tanked. It didn't do as well at Urban Radio as they wanted it to. It didn't do well at all at top 40. I think it only hit like 22 or something like that. And I think that they might be rethinking what the album should be. That's my guess. But from what I know now, she has nothing on the schedule for 2022.
And I could be way wrong. I mean, we've talked about this before. You got to hit the zeitgeist when you hit it. And we're talking almost 3 years later. So, you know, that could just be me talking about overthinking it.
All right. But Bono, true or false, number three. Bono, true or false, number three. Barry will make more than one trip to GA.
True.
Wow. Taco?
I'd say one and a half. He'll probably get about halfway and then turn back.
I love that. He'll head his way towards the exit, get about 15 feet out and say, nah, I'm good.
Yeah.
It depends on the golf cart situation.
There's no possible way you're getting there more than once. No possible way.
Actually, the next question should be, will Barry leave camp more than twice?
Well, that does lead me to my fourth and final Bono, true or false. Brian Stone will hook up with a random at camp.
True.
Okay. I know nobody cares about this, but I put out my top 10 songs of 2021, and there's one in particular I want to talk about because it's kind of the only song I've thought about for the last couple of months. There's a band from Isle of Wight, it's two women named Wet Leg, and I am obsessed with this song, Chaise Long. If I wasn't the first, I was one of two stations in the country first on it, and it's me and a station in Milwaukee that are just hammering this song. Now we've got some others like San Diego and Alt Nation, I think, is probably on it, but man, I'm obsessed with the song, and I don't know why the rest of the format is not picked up on this. I mean, it's everything that rock radio and especially alternative radio has been begging for, something unique and different and fun, and it's our own. But even though they're not getting as much love on radio, they're making everybody's top five list. Everybody. Mm. you look around, you can't find a list from a reputable entities that doesn't put Wet Leg Chaise Longue in their top five, top 10. Now, with all that being said, they did the Seth Meyers thing. I think they did the Jimmy Fallon thing. If they get on Saturday Night Live and they hit a second song, Barry, my fingers are crossed that we're looking at the surprise Thursday night headliner being Wet Leg.
Nice.
And it exploding their career like it did for the Alabama Shakes. Nice. I am all in on this band. And right. I hope that we get something really inspired, like a Thursday night headlining slot from Wet Leg.
I'm looking it up. I like it. I'll listen. I don't know it. I thought you were going to say BTS, but we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, if you start getting rumors of BTS, it's going to be a Bonnaroo. I might be going to an industry event that week. I might have to, whoops, look there.
Brad's
I'm double
a huge
bucks.
Fan, if anybody wonders. He's a double huge bucks. Fan.
All right, let's wrap up with the Beatles documentary. I finally watched it. I'll tell you, I didn't fall asleep.
I'm glad to hear that. You ask, and we talked a little bit about it 2 weeks ago. And I was halfway through the first episode, and I think I was a little even though I had nice things to say about it. And I told you that it's such a huge part of my family growing up. I started watching all of it and have finished. And I mean, I can't overstate again how important the Beatles are to my life. And to I don't think there's a Bonnaroo without the Beatles. I don't think I'm overstating that. I have said for many years that the first year I went to Bonnaroo re-energized my entire career. It reminded me why I got into the entertainment writing and journalism. It was because of the music. Seeing McCartney on the farm reminded me how powerful the Beatles were. The amazing, I looked this up. They did, here, I was going to ask you, what were you doing when you were 25 years old? Either one of you. I had just gotten out of college, got married. That's when these guys recorded this album.
Yeah, I had just gotten married and I was doing morning radio.
Yeah. They were 25. I mean,
fart jokes on the radio.
I think Ringo was 28, but they were 25 to 28 years old. They did Revolver and 12 months later did this. And then less than 12 months later did Abbey Road. So within a 2 year period, they released Let It Be, Something, Here Comes the Sun,
Jesus.
I know, right? And I heard this not too long ago. They released All We Need Is Love, which was 400 million people. It was the first satellite live broadcast. 400 million people watched that. Well, like 2 weeks later, they released Sgt. Pepper. I mean, so what those guys did in such a short amount of time, is incredible. And to be able to watch the process, I've asked many, many times in my career about ask songwriters how they, the process, how do you write song? You get to watch it with this thing. It's, I'm so glad to hear you say you didn't fall asleep.
No, I tell you, the thing that I loved about it was the thing that you seemed to hate about it at first. When you said, I was afraid that it was going to be nothing but a bunch of home movies. That's right. What I love about it.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like a bunch of home movies. And that's exactly what I'm looking for.
Unedited, unfiltered, exactly.
I feel like I'm just sitting around amongst them.
Yeah.
Watching
the greatest art in our lifetimes be created. Yeah.
Even if you don't like the Beatles, it is something that's just so unbelievably
right
important to have had happen in this world that we really love. Now, if you're not a Beatles fan, if you're not a music fan, I can understand you're not liking this. But if you're even not a Beatles fan and you love, this art form, how do you not love this? Yeah. This is everything that we've ever asked for. Exactly. You nailed it about the process. You nailed it.
Plus, this was shot in 16 millimeter film in 1969, and it looks like it was filmed yesterday. The amount of technology and processing that they have done make this video and audio look and sound fantastic is amazing. They basically
is that a Peter Jackson thing, though?
Yeah, that's Peter Jackson. I mean, they basically invented like new technology so that they could take the sound out of the mono track and remix it so that, you know, it sounds better. And, you know, it's
That's
amazing.
Such a great point, Russ. I was thinking about that yesterday watching it. This is 1969, and it does. It feels like today. Mm-hmm. The families, it doesn't feel dated. You know, it doesn't feel like we're watching old documentary type films at all. It feels very, very of the moment. And I think I did make this point before, even for people who don't like it, don't like the Beatles, and don't think they're the greatest thing ever. If you don't like them, I understand that. But to try to argue that they weren't important, that's where I am. What you're talking about, what they created. I mean, there were so many things that happened during that recording that bands today are still doing. Mm-hmm. That was the first time, and you know, just being first is one thing, but they were so good at it. That's mm-hmm. the thing that is incredible to me.
My final thing that I love about it is that I really like the fact how much they like each other. They are actually buddies, you know, and I think that part was the most surprising to me, because I never really thought that they dealt with each other.
Well, and that's a great point. I one of the things I've come away with is how much I really like John Lennon. And I was not a John Lennon fan.
Yeah.
It always seemed he was so acerbic. You know what I mean? He always was just back against the wall, but he's awesome in this thing. And mm-hmm. the relationship that he and Paul have, and all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know, and it's way inside Beatle baseball stuff, but you really sort of appreciate how much the early years when they were in Germany meant to them. I mean, they were a club band doing 8 hours a night, playing 3 shows. They're good. They yeah. know what they're doing.
Oh my God. And you just reminded me another thing that I really was surprised. Ringo's good.
He's terrific.
I mean, he just picks up and you never have to worry about him. Yeah. Right? Like, that's you never have to tell him something twice. And no wonder they liked him so much, because they could do... Yeah. Yeah, they could do whatever they wanted to, thinking in their own way, and they know that Ringo would be fine with it.
And every lick is perfect. I've heard Dave Grohl talk about that. He's not flashy. He's not John Bonham. He's not Keith Moon.
Mm-hmm.
But when you need a lick, you know, for Let It Be. Is it Let It Be? Yeah, Let It Be. He doesn't come in for like 20, 30 seconds. That had never been done before. You know, just a little detail like that helps make that song. Same with Billy Preston. That was the other thing I wanted to mention. Bringing him in to play the piano, you can tell.
That was amazing.
Changed the entire room, right? Mm-hmm. Changed the songs. Just random. He just showed up and it's like, we need a piano player. And oh my God, you could just hear the songs transform. But two things about Ringo. Man, he has the patience of Job. Watching him just sit that's there right. and never say anything.
Yeah.
And then be on it.
And then on it
was,
yep.
was pretty incredible. And then to, you know, to just watch those guys, oh, I got another idea. And it's Let It Be.
Yeah. I mean, that's, mm-hmm. it does sort of make you think about just human nature. You can have 3 strong personalities, but I don't know if you can have 4. I think 4 might just be too many.
You know, and this is total name dropping, but I keep coming back to it. Richard Lloyd is a guitar player with Television. They did Marquee Moon, which is on everybody's top 5 punk rock albums of all time. Richard lives here in Chattanooga now. And he told me he knew they were making a game changing, a classic record. So he has that confidence. But he said, and many people have said it, the Beatles, it took 4 of them. You know, you've got 4 unbelievably strong personalities, and together you've got, you know, gold. Mm-hmm. Individually, they would have all been okay, but nothing like what the 4 of them created. And mm-hmm. so I'm glad you brought up Ringo. I'm really glad you watched it, because
I've still got to get halfway through. I'm only halfway through.
The best part's ahead for
because,
you.
Because, I mean, it is an investment, man. I mean, and it's not like it moves fast. And you know, I've got to rewind it a lot because I don't know what, is there something wrong with my brain? But if you give me an accent, it is really hard for me to understand.
Oh, there's, you know? That's why they have subtitles. That is funny.
It is a little difficult. Like, that's the reason why I can't do Lord of the Rings. It's like, I have to like start over and over again. Like, what did they just say? Hang on a second. Let me take some notes here. Cause I just can't follow it.
There's some rough parts in there. And for me, I mean, it's kind of like going back to this discussion with Russ about Dune. How much do you need to know for this to be good? You know, how much of the book versus there are so many things that, you know, I'm a huge Beatle fan. So, I mean, every detail, every comment, everything is important.
Yeah. Again, I just keep coming back to, like, I don't think you need to know anything. And I don't think you need to be a fan, but there is something in, you know,
I agree,
like a drug about watching the process. At least, you know how much I obsess over that kind of stuff. And this entire show is born out of the idea of obsessing about mundane details. And it's one big mundane detail in that.
And that's where I give Peter Jackson total props, because he knows when to move on. You know what I mean? Yeah. He could just let that camera roll and we could, you know, labor through.
Yeah.
But he moves on to, you know, suddenly it's a hit. Now I hear it type of.
Yeah.
It's really.
Yeah. I'm glad that there's no like overall narration that's trying to tell you a story. I don't need any of that. I just want to watch guys figure it out on the fly. That's what I love so much about this thing.
Yeah. I mean, like for me, for example, I knew it was going to end, as we all should have. It was.
Don't tell
end.
Me, spoiler alert. Don't tell me how it ends.
Well, we all knew they were going to play on top of the Apple building, you know, but to see that moment when they're really struggling, like, what are we going to do? What's the event going to be? And then all of a sudden, aha, you know, done. There it is. So I don't know. I'm just so glad I watched it. And I'm really glad you guys are watching it. And I recommend anybody else who cares about music.
You know, it's one of those topics that, you know, will be camp fodder.
Oh, my God.
You know, this is going to take over an entire hour of conversation at camp.
I think it's going to be topic for us going forward when we have guests. Because in my entire career, I can't tell you how many artists the Beatles come up.
Yeah.
You know, doesn't matter whether it's a 19-year-old or a 90-year-old, the Beatles are a huge influence. And so this thing is going to, you're exactly right. It's going to be chatter.
Man, I love the conversation. You know, it was a loaded week, a lot of information, and we'll see how it all shakes out over the holiday. You guys have a great holiday if I don't talk to you. Barry, Wataka, anything else before we go?
No, just everybody, we never say it. Hit that subscribe button. And it is the holidays. I've got T-shirts and koozies and stickers. You can still
last
buy them.
Second Christmas gifts.
Go to the whatpodcast.com.
Stocking still stuffers. Yeah, get it for your mom. Get it for your dog.
Sure. A lot of stuff.
Look at that.
A lot of stuff available.
Still available online.
Still
available. Russ?
That's right. Still online.
I'll ship it out to you.
Man, you are so good. So good.
Yep.
Are you going to include a little like lock of hair into every package?
Send me a nice note and a request, whatever you want.
All right,
at this point now, it's negotiable.
Yeah. Lord Taco, Barry Corder, I'm Brad. We'll talk to you next year. Love you, bye.
Consequence Podcast Network.